got it. Here we go. Tom's back. Hey, everybody. Write to us at MyNorthwest.com. Text as well at 98973. Bunch of news to get to. That's the State Roofing text line at 98973. One lucky person's get a chance to be letter of the day. Had a good one yesterday. Very funny. You people, you think you're so funny with your funny, funny things. It's the kind of thing my basketball coach would say. Trying to insult us, but doesn't know how to put it all together in one sentence. Diving into the news! By the way, I have been unable to dive in the tributary that goes into the Yakima River, known as Little Creek, Tom, because it has frozen over.
I wanted to ask you about that at the top of the show. You sent a great shot of it. I was wondering if you went ice skating instead.
I couldn't go. I can't get in. So I said to Dougie, who stands out there, I said, Dougie, I'm going to get a big rock and smash it and get back in there again because I'm missing it. I'm missing it. It's
ice fishing.
It's too dangerous to be in there right now. Right. Lower me in. Hannah Scott's had a busy, busy day.
I really have.
You have, I know. I'm not being facetious. This is, you're working hard today. So let's talk about it. Where do you want to start?
Let's start with good news. Inslee, the governor, just held a press conference, just wrapping up. And he had some good news to offer on schools. Here's what he had to say.
We are opening our schools for in-person instruction. And this is such good news for our students. We know that in-person instruction is the best way to do instruction. It's best for the teachers. It's best for the students. It's best for the parents. And we know that this can be done safely. And the great news today I can share with people is that we are increasing the number of days that our students can have in-person instruction. We already have over 200,000 students who are today receiving at least some significant in-person instruction. And that is increasing every single day. And we are learning we can do this safely all over the state of Washington.
And to help everyone feel safe?
Today we are expanding the COVID testing assistance that we could provide to schools and school districts. This is part of our ongoing effort to give more students the option to return to in-person instruction. And it obviously increases access to testing, both for educators and students. The Department of Health has developed this testing pilot program during the last year, has been in place for 13 school districts, and it has become part of our playbook for returning our students to classes. So about 50 more school districts will now be participating in this volunteer program starting this month.
So that's that pilot where they have the testing program to help those various school districts. You know, you do the temperature and all of the various checks before you, and this the COVID testing as they come into school. So that's going to expand to 50 more school districts by the end of the month. But they weren't able to share which districts those were going to be, only that they were kind of a mixture. You've got some rural, you've got some larger. So I expect we'll hear more about that in the days ahead. This is really, you know, the CDC came out with some guidance a couple of days ago where they said this is what we have to say about the ability for schools to return to in-person learning. And that, I think, John, you've told me this a million times, the transmission out in the community doesn't really affect the schools. And that's what the science is pointing to right now. So that's basically what our guidance was already.
Since August. Right. They've had that since August. Yeah.
So that was our guidance already. The CDC guidance aligns with ours, and the parents would still have an option to do remote learning if their district goes back, if they don't feel particularly safe about it. I asked the governor if he felt that it was safe to return all K through 12 students in the state to in-person learning right now.
Well, I think what we're finding is that many of the school districts have started with the younger students. And they have built confidence after they have brought some of their younger students back. And that has allowed them to develop the protocols, have educators be comfortable with them, iron out some of the details, and then move up through the higher grades. That has been a journey that has been successful in many, many places. I have seen multiple places where high schools have been safely conducted. But the way I kind of look at, like, how would I respond for a loved one? So I have three grandchildren in public school right now. I am thrilled that they have gone back to an in-school environment in the last couple of weeks. I would have absolutely no qualms of them going to a high school right now. I would feel it was much preferable to have them in person in a biology class rather than remotely. So the answer to your question, yes, I do believe high schools can be safe. But schools are going to find their own journey on how to get that position.
Mm. So there you go.
They've been closed for almost a year, right?
Yeah, I believe it was late March when kids started remote.
Take the summer out of it. Yeah, you take the summer out of it. But they've been closed coming up for an entire school year. So I asked Tom, we weren't sure, we wanted to ask you, so what broke the logjam? What was it that finally pushed them over? Does anybody really know? Is it the 5% drop? Is it the money? Is it the fact that unions get something out of it? Are they going to take some of those federal dollars that were sent earlier, a couple of months ago, in that last program that went through, even though of the $63 billion that went out to the school districts, very few of them have used any of that money to actually change the interior environment for the schools. The money's just sort of sitting there unused. What stopped it? What created Inslee to all of a sudden go, gosh, maybe we should, since we spend 40% of our budget on this, we should open schools up? Do we know?
I can tell you it's the science, John, is that the science continues
the
to
science.
Show that there's no
the science. August,
the science.
Let me do some math. August, September.
Okay.
I'm gonna get some science here. November. Then I can't remember. December, January. So scientifically speaking, that's 5 months. Private schools have been operating. Private schools, Catholic schools have been operating. So 5 months. They knew back in August. But science now tells them they can open up. Are we believing that? Is anyone in the media believing that?
It plays a role. I'll say that.
Maybe question,
it plays
Hannah.
A role.
You don't have your answer. I rest my case, Your
That's
Honor.
A rhetorical
ahead,
answer.
Yeah. Yeah. No longer. Stop badgering the witness.
Yeah. Sit down.
I've got.
You can't handle the truth.
I can take it. I can take it.
I've got a couple of quick questions. One is, so I have heard, because right now, just because we're based in Seattle, and Seattle's the biggest school district in the entire state, that this comes home to roost here more than any place else, which is the issue of ventilation. I understand the science that indicates that kids are not carriers like, you know, we'd expect from adults, and that transmission often in schools is lower than it is out in the outside community. But one of the standards that CDC is issuing in terms of their guidelines is ventilation. And I have read that Seattle Public Schools has a lot of older buildings, and that the ventilation aspects of those schools to bring them up to speed have, you know, are not, you know, are not in, you know, I don't know if you consider them in process or aren't done or aren't completed. That's one of the physical components that hasn't ultimately been addressed. Do you know if that has yet?
I don't believe so. I think it was just a few days ago that it was some elementary school kids in the Seattle School District were maybe not going to return as soon as they were originally going to, which I think was next month early was the plan. And I think that the HVAC system has something to do with that. And you know, they're older buildings, and they don't have the money to do that. So I don't think that's been addressed. And I don't think Seattle is the only district that's going to have that issue.
I'm sure
I know
not.
Some of the larger districts in the North Sound are not reopened for similar reasons. So that's definitely going to be an issue. For now, the governor says, you know, as long as you mask up, you're doing the screenings and, you know, maintaining social distance. And then it's still, some of it's still, I will tell you, it was sort of vague, the press conference today, as far as it was just kind of what we've already been doing and a hybrid model. And there's federal dollars. There's plenty of money. He did say that, John. There's plenty of federal money out there. If more than the 50 need the help with the testing, they can get in on that. So we'll see. We'll see how many parents send their kids back and how many districts open up, because it is still up to each individual district. Yeah. And there is still concern about the variants, and not everyone that I've spoken to is convinced. And I don't mean public health officials, just public in general is convinced that everybody's kind of in a wait and let's see in the next couple of weeks what these variants do and make sure, because they don't know that necessarily applies to the school situation. If it's all variant, you know, if that variant takes over, so to speak.
And then
they do have a science experiment going on now. They have science experiments going on now called a private school. They've got kids in Catholic schools. They're not giving it to the teachers. They're not giving it to the administration. They're not giving it to the admin. They're not giving it to the vice principals. The kids are not getting it. There's very few kids that are gaining transmission. And if it is, it's asymptomatic. So we actually see it going on. So I know the governor loves science. He mentioned his kids going back to school for biology. He could have looked at the studies of September, October, November and seen what was happening in the private schools that have already opened that are providing education for their kids. And he could have used that. But I wonder if it has to do with Joe Biden being back in the White House now. Did it have anything? Is it not political? Of course, no one's going to ask him those questions because the idea is to keep it as vague as possible. Tom, if you have any other questions on this, it does bring other things in her basket.
Yes, I've got one more then. And that is, so we've had 13 school districts operating in part of this pilot test program where they are tested every day when they come into school. Is that?
Yes.
Okay. So my question is,
it's once a week. Yeah.
Once a week. Okay. So my question is, do in those 13, and then you said they're going to be expanded, another 50. So it'd be 63. Are those kids in school all the time, in person instruction, or is it still a hybrid model so that these 13 districts and now ultimately 63, is that like 5 days a week or is that like 2 days a week? Do you know what kind of, daily?
Yeah, I know what you're saying. I know that there's still largely the hybrid model. Not everyone back every day, because you have to maintain that distancing, right? You've got to be able to do that.
You can't do
that with capacity at the school. So that is my understanding, and that's what he said going forward with these 50.
And then how do the teachers do that? So is it is there like one in person teacher who just for her 5 days or his 5 days teach in person, and then the other teachers are teaching remotely and they're different teachers, or does the teacher come in?
I think it's a district-based plan, but I think yes, in some cases. So if you've got, let's say, a teacher that for whatever reason, age or health issues or just because is less comfortable teaching in person, that teacher could handle the remote.
Does the remote stuff.
And then you have the teachers who are fine.
Very interesting.
Yeah, so I think that's the way it's playing out.
Mm-hmm. Good. Okay.
All right.
Next topic.
Go ahead.
Drugs? You want to talk about some drugs?
Yes. Decriminalization.
Okay.
Hugs. By the way, let me just say this at the top. Tom and I were with Jesse Jackson. Hugs, not drugs. Right, Tom?
I'm not even that high on hugs.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. As long as it's not the war on drugs, which is the big message here, is that didn't work. And you can just look around and see that didn't work. So this is, Oregon has already passed it. The voters approved a law. It kicked in a few weeks back where they've decriminalized small amounts for personal use of most drugs. And the idea is to invest instead in treatment, much, much more treatment. And that's what we're talking about here. This proposal comes from Democratic Representative Lauren Davis, and she shared with the House Public Safety Committee on this bill when it got its hearing how her own personal experience when she helped an addicted friend helped her get to this proposal.
There was one particular night that I will never forget. He couldn't find a vein and was growing increasingly frustrated. He would trace his bruised and swollen arms up and down looking for a spot. He bent over and tried his foot, first the right, then the left. When that didn't work, he went into the bathroom, looked in the mirror, and puffed out his neck in an effort to inject there. After several hours of this, his arms, face, and legs were covered in blood. He began to weep. Tears streamed down his cheeks, and he whimpered, "I can't stop. I can't stop." His suffering was deep and profound. His suffering was so many things, but it shouldn't have been illegal. He deserved help, not handcuffs. Substance use disorder is a response to trauma. The real question is not why the drugs, but why the pain. This disease is about not wanting to experience the present because it is too painful a place to be.
So that's what she says, that the negative impact, like if you go after them with arrest or criminal actions of some sort, it doesn't change their behavior. So why bother to do that? We need to offer some hope, and that's the idea behind this plan. But the law enforcement community had some concerns.
Let us make clear that Washington's sheriffs and police chiefs would actively support this bill if the provisions legalizing the possession of controlled substances were removed. We encourage the legislature to focus these efforts on what we should do to address the problem rather than what we should stop doing. We acknowledge that the criminal justice system is not an appropriate or effective strategy to broadly address those with substance use disorder. We also agree that the criminal justice system should not be the most accessible path toward treatment. We must also acknowledge, however, that the criminal justice system has proven to be the only effective mechanism to intervene and treat many with substance use disorder.
At the same time, and I think we have this cut, Snohomish County Prosecutor Adam Cornell came out and spoke in support of the bill.
To the skeptics and opponents and those who are interested in keeping an open mind, here's what the bill does not do. The bill does not decriminalize other crimes or take away the discretion to arrest or charge those with other crimes. It doesn't get rid of our drug courts. It doesn't take away the prerogative of employers to maintain a drug-free workplace. And it doesn't take effect immediately. I anticipate an amendment that would take effect in July of 2023 that gives us the time to do this right and put a readiness check in the next legislative session. The wisdom of the times is not timeless. It is now time for a change and a new birth of wisdom.
So you also had Dan Satterberg come out and speak in favor of it. And he and Cornell both stressing, if you're going to do this, you've got to fund the treatment side of it, or it's all just going to blow up. And then you're going to have everybody pushing for serious, hardcore, you know, criminalization aspects again.
Yeah. Do we know how that would be paid for then, which is always a concern?
Couple of different things. It would all be worked out in the finance committees. But the idea is, one, that you're going to save some criminal justice dollars by not putting this through the courts and putting them in jail and various things like that. Then there's a really big federal grant program that's very specific for drug treatment that there's access to. And our own state attorney general, Bob Ferguson, just won, I think it's somewhere in the $13 million range, an opioid lawsuit that has to be spent specifically on drug treatment. That's where it's supposed to go, and that's what he's directed the legislature to do. Now, there's a lot of different bills and places vying for that, but that's the idea behind this.
Now, Oregon voters approved this. In this case, in Washington, it could be a legislative decision, correct?
That is correct. Yeah, in Oregon, it dipped into its marijuana tax dollars to pay for its treatment. This is not going to happen here. That's protected money for something else. I will say we did hear from a couple of people who said their children had died because of drug overdoses and that they had tried to get clean, but they had lost hope because they had so many things on their criminal record, couldn't get a job. There was no point, right? There's no hope to move forward. That's the idea here, the middle ground. So it'll be interesting to see what happens next. It got voted out of committee.
If they decriminalize it, then they also have to give free drugs.
Well, I didn't hear anyone propose that.
Well, you have to, because if you decriminalize it, you're still going to receive crime. The person's going to smash the window of the car, steal, hit the person over the head with something, steal in order to pay for the drugs that they then inject into their arms. And they're not getting the help that they want because they don't want the help that they want. For whatever reason, they're not getting it. You look what happens in Vancouver, the injection site up there, only about 6% get help. The rest come in and shoot up. So you should do what they do in Vancouver, give them the drugs for free. Then, therefore, you don't actually have the extenuating circumstances of crime that follows the addict.
I want to stress that this has a continuum of care. It's got peers, so it's got outreach where they go out. It's making sure that you get these people into the care.
And when they don't want it?
They're supposed to, like, want it more under this program.
Okay.
Because of peers, people who've come through it and come out the other side. That's a big part of what this bill does.
I got it. Thank you, Hannah. Gail Mortgage, 1-888. 778-K-I-E-L. How's that to the music, huh, Sean?
That was lovely, John. Lovely.
Could have been the only guy on the dance team. Of course, we went to an all-boys high school, so I would have been the only person on the dance team if we had a dance team. All right.
You could have dubbed yourself the Curlies.
Only one of me, Tom.
Sure. Yeah, the short and curly.
Hey. You don't have my fly on that morning show you used to do with me. We're a little more sophisticated in the afternoon. Besides, we're about to talk about a serious topic.
Yes.
A country singer finally breaks through. This guy's got like number one hits. Everybody loves him, except he drinks a whole bunch. He's made a bunch of apologies for that sort of stuff. He's going home. He's making a bunch of noise. I don't know what time it is, 1 o'clock in the morning or something. His neighbor's mad that he's making a lot of noise outside. and the neighbor decides to take video of him. His name, of course, is Morgan Whalen. And he is going into his house. And this is, by the way, here's some of his music that makes.
Girl, our mama's best friends, and so are we. The whole town's rooting for us like the home team. Most likely to settle down, plant a few roots real deep and let them grow.
I don't know why I listen to country music. I don't know why this guy stands out any more than anyone else. Dierks Bentley, Luke Bryan, anybody else, Eric Church, love them all. All great. Sam Hunt, kind of a poser. But anyway, we can talk about that later. Here we go.
Well, his new album is number one right now.
Yeah,
and has
people
been
love
for
him,
weeks.
Right? People love his music, love his voice, love his lyrics, love, love, love. So he's coming out of his, going into his house after, looks like he's had quite a few. And then.
Hey, y'all too. Yeah.
By the way, this is a lot of edits. There should be three beeps or four beeps in a row on this one, Chris. Am I right on this one? Chris,
yes,
Martin,
there is.
Still alive? Still awake? Yeah. Okay.
Hey, take care of this asshole. Hey, hey, Gracie, take care of this asshole.
All right, there you go. So, oops, he said the N-word. He also said the P-word. That's not a big deal. Denny and the U, the MF word, those words and all that. But the N word, he touched the third rail, which ends your career. So, Mr. Morgan, I think the label has dropped him, a record has dropped him. I think he might lose his podcast. I think somebody said he's suspended or something, which isn't quite enough for people. But he, at this point, it's pretty much over for this guy, right, Tom?
Well, yes and no. I mean, initially, the response, again, as a country star, this might not be seen as the kryptonite that it might for other kinds of stars. But the fact that the American the Academy of Country Music said he's not, invited to their award show this year after all, and radio stations and streaming playlists dropped his music. So that would seem like the country music industry, had a strong reaction to it. However, the buying public might not have bought into that, because now it's a little hard to tell, because he had the number one album already for 3 weeks before this, and it continues to be the number one album. What I can't tell, we don't have the numbers yet, we're not far enough away from it. I wonder if there are people now buying his album, you know, because of the attention, and they think it's unfair, it's part of cancel culture and all of this, that he's being, reprimanded so harshly, if you deem that harshly or not. By the way, his popularity is booming, not just because of his new album, which is number one, but they say he had an old album from a few years ago that's now higher than it ever had been at number 10. So this is one of those interesting situations where he's apologized. He is mortified that he's been caught on camera using the N-word.
Does context matter? Does context matter? Because we've just had this big debate happening at the New York Times, because there's a guy who wrote for the Times for like 25 years. Yeah. No, it's not. He worked for the Times for 25 years. He was on a field trip with a bunch of high school kids in Peru. Some girl asked some question about, my friend used the N-word in a video when she was 12 years old. Then this writer for the New York Times said, well, what was the context for using? And then he said the N-word, which, again, you know, a lot to say. So the question is context. Does context matter? New York Times comes out with an email and says, context at no time does not matter. Intent does not matter. The word itself is horrible enough that we must take this action. And then a bunch of journalists that write for the New York Times, or a few of them anyway, went, really? Context doesn't matter? And then somebody drew a whole list of every time the word's been used in the New York Times. So then they said, okay, sorry about that. Context does matter. So in this case, is he saying it to hurt somebody, or is he just drunk and he's referring to his blanky blank blank friend and using the word then? I mean, is it...
I don't
context
think
context matter about the word, no?
Yeah. Well, I don't know what you mean by context. You cannot use that word and say it's flattering that he's doing. I thought you were going to say the context is he's drunk. Well, add to the context.
That's the extenuating surf test. I'm saying the use of the word. It is the weirdest thing, where black people can get away with it, white people can't. I always wonder, Drake's mom is Jewish. His dad is black. But Drake, if you listen to 0 to 100, which I know you know the lyrics of that one, Tom, why is Drake allowed to say it? He's half black and half white. But is he going to get a certain number of the words, N-words, he's allowed to say until he's used up his quota?
Well, there are.
It's weird.
Okay. within the African American community, there is a split between whether blacks should be using it or not, too. So it's a complex issue. But I think it's safe to say that if you're white, there's probably not many contexts in which you can justify this. Now, I think the Morgan Wallen controversy is different from the New York Times one. And so I just want to make that kind of distinction. I think basically because it's not like it's a performance. Mm-hmm. I think what somebody does now, he is a writer for the New York Times. He didn't write it in the New York Times. He was on a sponsored thing. So let's just stay with the Morgan, the country singer thing first. Mm-hmm. He said this. It wasn't from the stage. He wasn't endorsing it, but he was saying it. And this, in our time, I think you cannot use that word in any kind of way that so you can justify it. Now, the academic setting of the New York Times thing, I think, is a different kind of issue. What's that?
Tom, he's calling to his friend. Is this friend some black? He's yelling. He's talking, take care of that blanky blank blank blank, right? I mean, he's calling out. He's using the word. The question is, like, who's allowed to use it, who's not? When Gwyneth Paltrow used it, she's quoting a lyric from a song, and then your friend Nas comes out and says,
who has a right to use it? The I mean, look. I will slap the shit out of somebody for Gwyneth Paltrow. She's the homie. She's cool. If Gwyneth gets a pass, real people get a pass.
Yeah, real people get a pass. So real people allowed to use it, like Larry Whitmore calling the
Birds
president.
Birds alone do me no justice. So, Mr. President, if I'm going to keep it 100. Yo, Barry, you did it, my
So I'm not quite clear. The context in which the country singer said it was he was saying that to a black friend?
No, it's just being used as a term of endearment. That's a term of endearment back and forth. He's using it. It's a term of endearment most often expressed often when it comes to
say
rap
that?
Music.
Did he say that?
No, Tom,
because he said he's apologizing.
Take care of. Yeah, okay. Bye.
I think the New York Times situation is more interesting because then if you talk about it in a more academic setting, can you ever use the word? And I do think this has changed over time because you can discuss the N-word without using the N-word and probably still get the same effect. So I think in retrospect, that's probably what the New York Times guy should have done.
Okay.
But I mean, that's come up with me. There's a great movie about James Baldwin, a documentary called "I Am Not Your Negro," and in that he is on I think it's the Dick Cavett show, and he uses the N-word in a really powerful way. This is a black guy using the N-word, to make a point that's very poignant. And I was thinking I would use the clip from the movie in my review. And I was overruled, or it was discussed. I mean, we decided that management said, no, under no circumstance should you play that. And I think that's probably the right move at this point because it's such an inflammatory word that the reactions to the word override whatever point I was trying to make with the use of the word in my review. Yes.
All right. Tracy Taylor, we'll look at traffic for us on a Tuesday. Oh, it would have been a brilliant plan. They could have stretched us into a 97-minute crappy movie, Tom, right? There was a prop bet. Would the Super Bowl have a streaker? And this guy's like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to place a bet. And how much would he have won, Tom?
Well, he supposedly, the original story was he's going to win $50,000 on his stunt. And then it gets more complicated. So I don't know how you want to
I think the prop bet was that if the streak of the Super Bowl, I thought he could have won like $300,000+. So
it was a $50,000 wager, and that the amount he bet on, so he could win $374,000 in his winnings. And when that story first came out, a bunch of bookies says there's no bookie in his right mind, no gambling institution that would allow for that big a bet. So then he fessed up. Well, actually, I placed a bunch of smaller bets, on this, saying the odds were, like 100 to 1 or something.
Yeah. And now, that's he had insider information. This guy had insider information that there would be a streaker because he was the streaker.
20, 5:03 to go. Someone has run on the field. Some guy with a bra. And now he's not being chased. He's running down the middle of the 40. Arms in the air and a victory salute. He's pulling down his pants. Put up your pants, my man. Pull up those pants. He's being chased to the 30. He breaks a tackle from a security guard. The 20, down the middle, the 10, the 5. He slides at the 1, and they converge on him at the goal line. Pull up your pants. Take off the bra and be a man. And the players with hands on hips at the other end of the field are looking at him and shaking their head and saying, why, oh, why? Is this taking place in a Super Bowl?
He could have yelled out, do you believe in miracles? By the way, technically, he's not streaking. He's on the field with his pants on, right?
Yeah. And he's wearing, So the what comes down to is that they tracked down the site where all these bets were placed called Boveda or Bovada.
Yeah.
And they said, that they realized that they have to have integrity in their prop bets. And since this guy made the bet and then, you know, did it himself to break the bet, that they, anybody who wagered against a fan getting on the field, they are refunding those their money. And anybody who won, who paid out winning a bet on the accounts that can establish that they had no idea, they were going to go ahead and do the gracious thing and pay them out. But when, because of this guy, because he didn't keep his mouth shut, he's not going to get the winnings.
No money for him. I was at Carnegie Mellon, and the theater department said, hey, let's all go streak tonight. So, like, 7 or 8 of us all took off our clothes and went streaking. And then when we couldn't get back in the door because it had locked behind us, they're all like, what do we care? We're in the theater department. We don't mind being nude. And I was like, I'm in it too, but I'm kind of not like it. And they just walking around singing that singing songs from Hair.
See, they were the original curlies.